हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 33, chapter 85. You are false ego in the mode of ignorance, which is the source of the physical elements. False ego in the mode of passion, which is the source of the bodily senses. False ego in the mode of goodness, which is the source of the demigods, and the unmanifest total material energy, which underlies everything. Anu Shai Inam, footnote 11. Anu Shai Inam refers to living entities when they merge in Prakriti. That is not the state of liberation. Srila Jiva Goswami.
I have a question about the citta.
The citta?
Yeah, previous class. We finished with the footnote 10.
Footnote 10.
Your ordinary memory of the citta. And
yes.
Also remembrance that concentrates on the Lord.
Yes.
They separate here the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same.
It may be the same function, but you have to give it a distinction. It's just a matter of refining.
Refining.
Just like, let's say you take a frying pan, okay, and I put just a very small amount of ghee in there, right, and I put some potatoes, right. And we push them around again. Okay? Then you'll say you're just cooking potatoes.
Mm.
Right? Now let's say I put those same potatoes in that same pan, but I put quite a bit of oil. So the whole bottom is slightly covered.
Mm.
I mean, you can see oil all the way across. Now what will I say?
Frying.
Right? Shalva. Now if I put a lot of oil in there, so they actually kind of float around, I'll say I'm deep frying.
Mm.
You understand? So you'll be frying the potatoes, you'll be shallow frying, you'll be deep frying. But as far as the potatoes, the cut of potatoes, the pan, the heat, everything may be exactly the same. So there'll be some subtle difference. So that subtle difference is enough then to call it the difference between the memory and the citta, and also the memory that concentrates on the Lord, sati. So the general memory will simply be what you'd remember based on your karma. Remembrance of the Lord, that will be based on your devotion. Right? So then, because both of them being Krishna, he reveals himself. So if we are simply looking for him as material nature, he'll reciprocate as material nature. So that whatever area we're functioning in including him, then, I didn't say not including him, whatever aspect of the material nature we're interacting with, and we're dealing with appropriately, then we'll have the proper karma to have the memory in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
But if we, you know, so that's just the memory that's in the citta. But then, if we're dealing in a way to see it in connection with Krishna, then we will have that aspect. So in one sense, the two can be overlapping. Because you're performing a secondary activity, but that activity is being done very nicely, you know, according to the rules. And so you have the memory on how to do that properly and why and all that. But now if you engage that in Krishna, that's a further aspect of memory. Because you can perform the activities properly, but it doesn't mean that because of that you'll remember Krishna. Does that make sense? So that remembrance of Krishna from that, then that's sati. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to do, is that, because if we simply try to do the activities nicely, but we don't put any emphasis on remembering Krishna, then we'll just be able to do them nicely. But we put it on remembering Krishna while doing it nicely, then that'll be a further aspect of memory. Does that make sense? You know, like you see, we were discussing in the morning, the Brajvasis. They see anything, they remember Krishna. So that's this memory that concentrates on the Lord. Is that what I'm saying? Well, someone else may be a great scholar, you know, and a walking encyclopedia and stuff like that. I mean, you hear now and again, not as often, but before, you see more, like 70s, 60s, 50s, people who are, you know, even going back, people who are known as walking encyclopedias. You know, they just knew everything. They were so studied.
Before Google.
Yeah. Now everybody is a scholar, right? Yeah. So then they have a great memory, you know, in the citta. But the thing is they are not remembering the Lord. What you see is that the residents of Vrindavan, especially like the gopis, they're not great scholars. But they remember Krishna on everything. So actually that memory is superior. Is that, yeah. So that's the... Okay, so then false ego is that it's the false identity. It means if we think that we're the controller and enjoyer and friend of all living entities, or at least whoever we are interested in being that with, he's the controller and enjoyer of all, and we'll be friends with whoever we like. But, you know, then that potency, that's still coming from Krishna. Because he has this jnana potency, but there's also the ajnana potency. Otherwise, how would living entities be in ignorance unless there's a potency? It's not just happening. Otherwise, why is it everybody's in ignorance? If it wasn't there, it would just be haphazard. Somebody is, somebody's not. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So Krishna is all these. So from false ego and ignorance, then comes all the physical elements, right? And then from passion comes the senses, sense objects, and you know, the tanmatras, all that kind of stuff. And then from goodness, and what does he give from goodness? The demigods are coming from there, right? And then the unmanifest, the total material energy, which underlies everything. Right. So living entities emerge in Prakriti. It means that they're absorbed in Prakriti. They're so absorbed in this ignorance that they identify with the Prakriti. They think they are Prakriti. Like that. When you have a little knowledge, then you understand you're the soul. You're not the body. Right. Somebody say?
If everything is coming from Krishna, means jnana or ajnana.
Yeah.
This means that we can see... We can know, we can perceive only thing after Krishna.
Yes. Whatever Krishna reveals, that's what we can see. And because he's conscious of everything, so we could be conscious of any particular aspect, but that knowing that is going to be according to our particular activity. How we surrender to Krishna, that's then how we're going to... That will be the area Krishna will reciprocate as knowledge, as memory, as that. Right? Because it's always in the area we work in.
Yes.
Because the point is he's everything, so it could be anywhere.
Yes.
But it's where you approach him, that's where he reciprocates. Just like on our karma. Right? Let's say for our karma, we're supposed to get a certain amount of maintenance. Mm-hmm. Right? By our karma. So if we do nothing, we'll get it.
Yes.
But people, you know, the natural thing is to perform duties. Mm-hmm. Means one is that you have the element of goodness that you're supposed to do duties and do those things. But there's also the element of that passion that I want to get benefit. Mm-hmm. So if I perform an activity, I'll get benefit.
Yes.
So then whatever your maintenance is supposed to be, it will come through the area that you make your endeavor for maintenance in. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, it'll still come.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So if you go and get a job, it will come through that job. However, but it's only going to be how much it's supposed to be. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
One guy works in finance, right? And that he doesn't make very much money. He's got this little office and little things over here, and he's doing this little thing. Someone else works in finance, and they make tons of money. But there are people, they're born with that same tons of money. He didn't go into finance. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that you're going to get whatever you're supposed to get. Now we think, oh, it's going to come through this. Oh, I want to work in, you know, this field, you know, IT. Then how much money you're supposed to get? If you're supposed to get $1,000, you'll get $1,000. You're in IT. But if you go into some, you'll still get the same $1,000. You start your own business, you'll get $1,000. That's not going to change. You know, the idea is that, so you have the infant, how you want to interact with Krishna, and accordingly, he's going to reciprocate. So the same in knowledge. Whatever area you reciprocate with Krishna in, that's the area he reciprocates with you. Or you approach Krishna, he reciprocates as that kind of knowledge and that kind of memory. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like some people are very good in language, but not in math. Mm-hmm. And some people are very good in math and not in language. Like that. Some are good at both and some are good at neither. Like that. So it's just a matter of how you've approached the Lord, you know, in some point in your sojourn in the material world, that you have, and then you'll receive it and you'll have the karma for that. Now you can continue that now or change direction. It's just, so you always have that choice. So when we say predestiny, it's what the situations you're going to be in, what you're going to get. But then what you do with it, how you want to use, and which way you want to receive it through there. You know, it's just like the guy brings the package. You could open the door. You could just, you know, tell him to leave it on the front porch. You could open the window next to there and take it in through there. You know, you could step outside and get it. You could just open the door enough that they, you know, and just tell them to put it down, you know, and then when they've left, then open the chain and then get it. You know, it means there's so many things you could do. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of these things, because those are the areas you want to work in. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? The guy brings the package because you ordered it. We can't complain when we get the package that, what's this? Where's my free will? Why is this package being forced upon me? You know? Does that make sense? Just, we don't remember, you know, last life or how many lifetimes ago we wanted that package.
You can try it on Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. So, universal Amazon, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, and they got 33 million demigods running the thing, right? Like that, so thing, like, much bigger than Amazon.
Krishna
did
send Yama people's delivery guys.
Yes. Depends who you are. And they even have dogs, right? You know, so it's not just
So only through bhakti we can cancel the order of this package?
Sorry?
Only through bhakti we can cancel the order of this particular package.
That, no, we'll now just use it in Krishna's service.
Because some packages are undesirable.
That's there, but because you ordered it, then you're going to get it. You wanted it. You only see the negative now, but unless you get rid of the principal aspect of that order, then you'll get the order. Order might be a little smaller or a little adjusted, but you'll still get the order. So unless you've given up the desire and need in that, then there's no need for the order. You know, because you order a pizza and then you decide you want Chinese, that's not, we can't say, is, oh, but the pizza's undesirable. You're still hungry. But if you give up, you know, hunger and ordering all this, so you're just self-satisfied, then okay, now you don't need it. And even if you did, you just give it to some friends. They still like Chinese. Or they still like pizza. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the whole thing is this, undesirable means it's not connected to Krishna. So then connecting it to Krishna is useful. It can't be, it's not within your context to connect to Krishna, then yes, then you don't use, then you do something else. Okay. You are the one indestructible entity amongst all the destructible things of this world. Unlike the underlying substance. Oh, excuse me. Where did I get un? Oh, that's above. Unmanifest. Okay. Like the and there's an un here. Okay. Like the underlying substance that is seen to remain unchanged while the things made from it undergo transformations. Like earth is still there. Then things are made from earth. The earth is still the same principle. Does that make sense? Yeah. So Krishna's like that. He's the unchanging because he's the one pervading. He's the one that's opposing. Then all those things are there. Then all that transformation is going on. And we're seeing that and identifying with that. The modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, together with all their functions, become directly manifest within you, the Supreme Absolute Truth, by the arrangement of your yoga maya. So everything has its origin in him, and then its manifestation. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. In the Bhagavad Gita, this fact is very nicely explained in the ninth chapter, wherein the Lord says, "In my impersonal form, I am spread all over the material energy. Everything is resting in me, but I am not there." Right? Because as a person, he's not. Yes. Through his impersonal, he is. This very statement is also given. By Vasudeva. To say that the Lord is not present everywhere means that he is aloof from everything, although his energy is acting everywhere. This can be understood by a crude example. In a big establishment, the energy or the organization of the supreme boss is working in every nook and corner of the business. But that does not mean that the original proprietor is present there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Means they want you to think that they are, but they're not. Yeah. Although in every department, the presence of the proprietor is felt by the workers. The physical presence of the proprietor in every department is formality only. Right? Does that make sense? So like that, Krishna is through the Brahman, through his energies, is spread everywhere. But he as a person is aloof from that. Actually, his energy is working everywhere. Similarly, omnipresence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is felt in the action of his energies. Therefore, the philosophy of inconceivable simultaneous oneness with and difference from the Supreme Lord is confirmed everywhere. The Lord is one, but his energies are diverse. Right? Some instance. Yeah. Right, so there, hence Echad and Elohim. Right? Yes? Yes.
This morning also we started with this, and it's a very bold statement that, you know, God is, and his energy is simultaneously different and non-different, and it's obvious and it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently before Mahaprabhu came, he wasn't revealed. He revealed this in Bhagavatam.
Yes. But the point is who takes Bhagavatam as their main book? Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was a preacher of the Bhagavatam.
Right.
So means this has already been revealed in the Vedas themselves. Right? You know, it's like you see in the Upanishads. Why is there confusion? Because some verses talk about the oneness of the Lord, while other verses are talking about the difference. Like that. So it's already been given, but because of the it's not been revealed. Right? Because there is just this is the original philosophy. Then, according to what interest of the living entities, then it's revealed. So we see is that in the great scholars, there's six different schools that they are what's revealed to them, and different aspects that are there. Logic is a natural form of the Vedic system, but it's not the complete system. Right, the atomic theory is a natural part, but it's not the complete. Shankya, you know, the analysis of it is part of the system, but it's not complete. Yoga, you know, the karma, like that, and then the Vedanta. These are all parts of the system, but to understand it completely, then you need the Satchitananda Veda. then every there's no aspect that you can't deal with. That's why you see is that these other philosophies when we're going through, they don't study all aspects of all books. They only take those portions of the books that support their philosophy. Mm-hmm. And other portions they just leave.
Yes.
You know, they'll just say, well, that's not important. Like when it came down, you see there were so many arguments there by I forget who we're dealing with. If it was, I think it was Shankya, that, you know, the Shastra says this, but don't worry about that. You just worry about what the Acharya said. You know, and our approach to scripture is through the Acharya, so on one level it's not wrong, that point that they're making. But the principle is their philosophy is not broad enough to actually include that. So if they want to stick to that, they want that realization, they can't deal with those other points. Because if they deal with those other points, they'll have to broaden their understanding. And that will take them beyond their philosophy. Right? Because if you want Shankya, that's all there is. You can't study those others. Because if you do, then you'll start to understand there's more than just Shankya. It's important, but it's only part of the process. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, so that they're following the guru, then that part's good. But then, you know, they also have to be careful who they choose as guru. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So that's there. Then, giving having compiled all the Vedic literatures, then trying to give the essence to make it accessible and make it easy, then we see Vyasadeva gave Mahabharata. And Mahabharata has all the information that's there in the Vedic literatures, and even put some in there that you may not, some details, some other things that you may not catch in the main literatures. It'll be there. Like I think it's a verse in the Mahabharata says, whatever's in all other literatures is in Mahabharata, but what's in Mahabharata may not be in other literatures. Because it may not be explained. They'll give the principle, may not give detail. He'll give that detail. There won't be any new principles, but there may be some details that he's brought out that won't be. And we see the accessibility is everybody likes Mahabharata. From the scholar right down to the little kid. Everybody likes it. So as far as making a book that's accessible that gives you the knowledge of the Vedas, he did a great job. No one can write like that. You know, I mean, he's the empowered incarnation of the Lord for that.
About the itihasas, some people ask, why didn't he write Ramayana also? Why was it supposed to be Valmiki? It's not on the same level?
No, but why not? If somebody else wants to take part, what's the problem?
But it's supposed to, but it's reconsidered on the same level, those two itihasas.
See, it's also is like this. It's not that he didn't write it, because he's writing when? At the end of Dwapara, right? Because in the first three yugas, then people, just by hearing, they remember, and you don't have to write. Okay? And so then it's compiled at the end of the Dwapara, just before Kali Yuga. Right? When is the Ramayana composed? In the Treta Yuga. So that's why he doesn't have to write it, because it's already been written. It's not that he didn't write it, and then after that, then Valmiki came along and said, well, what about this one? You know? is that like that? So it's already written, as we see as a principle. If it's already been nicely articulated by one of the acharyas, there's no need to redo that. Like what Gotama gives is Nyaya. No one else then defines. It's used like that. Because it's already been given. You know, what is there in Mimamsa, everybody else uses that. Does that make sense? So it's already been nicely given by all these great personalities. So then you just follow that. So, yeah.
Bhagavatam also, Sukadeva Goswami tells to Parikshit Maharaj, actually you already heard about Ramayana. So I am not going to
discuss it much. Yes, true. It's a shorter story. And so then, but because it's not obvious, he didn't bring out that achinta beta beta tattva aspect and that aspect of pure devotion. He mentions it, but the common person may not catch that, because much of the time, since we work by the externals, we also, that means we have a tendency to work by volume. It's because the volume of the Mahabharata is not about pure devotional service, or the, so you know, devotees and the Lord. Therefore, we may take that as the primary thing. So then, he wrote Bhagavatam. Then, with that, with his realization, then that is very, very clear and exact that this is what is the essence. That's why it says it's the mature fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge, like that. So whatever the Vedas are saying, then that's given in Bhagavatam. There'll be no contradiction. So if there's any verses from the Veda itself, it will never contradict the Bhagavatam. Okay. Because it's already on. Okay. The Bhagavatam is giving the actual purport to the Veda itself. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because what we want to say is the knowledge that's there in philosophy, you know, how to properly look at it, and that is in the Upanishads. And we see, and then the essence of that is given in the Vedanta Sutra. Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So then it's already gone. Is that okay?
Can we say that to test Srimad Bhagavatam, to realize Srimad Bhagavatam, it's only by revelation?
It's only by revelation, but that revelation is coming by association. So, because we associate with Bhagavatam and with the acharyas, you know, and with the devotees discussing, then Krishna reveals. Because everything is revealed. It's just a matter of, how do you say? We bring out that aspect of revealed in connection with all the spiritual aspects, because the material facilities won't give any advancement in that. Right? And so, therefore, then we say it's a matter of revelation, but you follow the process, the devotional process as recommended. But even the material is still revealed.
Yes.
But you have to work with your material senses in that material area, but what will be revealed is still only material.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody sits down and analyzes something and all that, and then at some point, if they followed nicely, they have the karma for it, then something's revealed.
Yes.
And you see, when it's revealed, it was so simple, it was so obvious, it was right there all the time.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's just a matter of a revelation. But because they use the material senses and material methodology for material results, all they get is material results.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still revealed, but because they're so much absorbed in the secondary and the mechanical, that nobody likes to look at it that way. It's, no, by my hard work, that's how I got it. No, it's that you applied yourself to that, and the Lord being pleased in that capacity, then revealed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why now then you have that knowledge or skill or ability or facility.
Yes, yes.
Does that make sense? But it's the same principle in the spiritual, but that means now you have to follow the spiritual activities. So it's that you engage the senses, but it's not because I'm using my senses I can get.
Yes.
Just like for the materialist, the scientist, he knows things because Krishna reveals them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter, you apply yourself there in the proper way, it's revealed. You know, it's just like, you go back to the Greeks and that. Much of the things, they were working on things that only in the last, let's say, 100 or 200 years, then the modern Europe is actually taking up where they left off. Because why? In between that, whatever it is, let's say, like 1400 years, then Europe wouldn't approach it from that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't use the intelligence in that scientific method, so nothing was revealed in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, but when they do, it just takes up where they left off, that's all.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So it's wherever you apply yourself, that's where it's revealed. So that's why, that's the point. Krishna being everything, there isn't anything other than Him. So that knowledge, that both material memory and spiritual memory are both coming from Krishna. So when He says knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness, that applies both spiritual and material. Right? We remember material, we forget spiritual. We remember spiritual, we forget material. Right? The knowledge about Krishna, then we have that, or knowledge about Maya. Or let's say knowledge within Maya. Because knowledge about Maya comes with knowledge about Krishna. Therefore, the philosophy of inconceivable simultaneous oneness with and difference from the Supreme Lord is confirmed everywhere. The Lord is one, but His energies are diverse. Right, because there's always inconceivable and simultaneous. If there's just oneness and difference, that's Dvait Advait. But simultaneous, and how can it be simultaneous? How can it be one and different? That's the inconceivable. So it has to be understood as this. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. If I am Pradhan, then I will be subject to change just as the Pradhan transforms into objects of this world, as Pradhan is the cause of the universe. The counter-argument is given in two verses. The three gunas, which are also called Pradhan, and which undergo transformation such as Mahat Tattva, Vrittayaha, all of these have been produced by your inconceivable spiritual energy, Yoga Maya, within you, who are beyond the gunas, Pare. They are not actually within you. They have been produced under your glance. Right? Means just as this energy is non-different from Him, it's within His energy. Right? Does that make sense? But as a person, it's not within Him. But it's by His sanction. That's why it's inconceivable.
Can we approach Bhagavan without understanding Brahman?
Yes, means that if you're attracted by the person, you can understand, but then with time, you'll understand.
With time, yeah. But to see, like...
With time.
Yes.
It's just like, our devotees in the movement Advancing in Krishna Consciousness?
Yes.
How many can discuss actually about Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma? But they're advancing, because they're dealing with the person. The person already includes this. So it's not a matter of scholarship or anything. It's a matter of that devotion to Krishna. But the acharyas do talk about it. So therefore, then if one knows, then it can be useful in preaching and teaching and your own practice.
Yes.
Right? Because then you can start to distinguish between what is what.
Yes.
You know, like we said, practical, like we said, the devotee has to go to work and you know, all the, you know, how you say, commuting and then at work with the karmis and all these different things and the job itself, it's not that... You know, he's going to this karmi job with all these karmis, and what they're doing is, printing Prabhupada's Bhagavatam or something. You know, so probably that devotee doesn't complain, right? So, but they're doing something mundane. But the point is the potency of all these things, how they work in that, that's all Krishna. So you can see Krishna in all this, so you don't have to be separate from Krishna. But if you can just remember Krishna, then you don't have to use all these technical points. You know, for the gopis, they'll see something and then simultaneously then they'll think of an aspect of the personal. But we'll tend to go through, you know, some steps and we may eventually get there or get distracted by the, you know, that intellectual process. And, but for them, it's simultaneous. You know, they just immediately see. You know, it's just like the mother sees the baby's shoes and thinks of the baby.
Yeah.
Well, we see the shoes, and what kind of shoes are those, and what are they made out of, and all that, and, you know, then we'll get into that, and, you know, it's like that, but, you know, is that, you know, ecologically a good shoe? You know, you can't get these other shoes, but she's already thinking of the kid, we're just thinking of shoes and ecology, and, you know what I'm saying, so that's the point. Is that, yes. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on the same verse. Quote, because of the varieties of Shaktis, by their faults, I also will be considered faulty. Right? So Krishna is giving arguments against this. He's saying, you are, you know, the greatest, you're all the... He's saying, no, but if that's true, then that'll make us this, that'll make us that. So it just, the devotee then brings it more personal, because this is so grand, then it has to bring it more and more specific. Because then it becomes about his personality. Because what's happening is that you're first talking about him as, you know, basically Paramatma, as God. You know, the greatness in that. But then by these points that he makes, you have to talk about him as Bhagavan.
Yes.
You know, so it just brings it closer. The devotee's closer to him. It also breaks down some of the majesty so then he can be the son. You know, so like this. The gunas are produced by you, Achintya Shakti, Yoga Maya. So this inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference, then the inconceivable is the Achintya Shakti. And that's Yoga Maya. So that's why then it always has to be mentioned. Mm-hmm. Because it's through his Yoga Maya that he is one with and different from.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know.
Mm-hmm. The gunas are produced by you, Achintya Shakti, Yoga Maya, inherent in your Swarup. Though the gunas are within you, you are not touched by them. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyaktina murtina matstani sarva bhutani na chaham teshva vastitaha. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So Bhagavad Gita 9.4. Na cha matstani bhutani pashyame yogam aishvaram. Bhutabrin nacha bhutasto mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the mediator of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation, for I am the very source of creation. Bhagavad Gita 9.5. So that's the silence, because through his yoga maya, it's all, etc. But the yoga maya is his energy.
Yes.
She expands his energy, she takes care of everything. So that way it's there, but at the same time he's not. Mm-hmm. The same time as it's all him, because mm-hmm. she is his energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah?
We just need to accept his inconceivable.
Yes, we accept. And if we accept it, then Krishna will reveal it, how this, you know, in other words, inconceivable can be conceivable by us. But as long as we say, oh, that's not possible, then it will never be possible. We'll never understand it.
You say that we accept inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. And others, they say one and different.
Yes. You look at it one way or the other.
What's the difference? By example, if you can.
By example. Somebody had a brain. If someone else is trying to give an example, you can easily see that's wrong. No, it should
okay,
be this.
Okay, can I do? For example, we say we are one with the Lord in quality, but
yes.
we are different in quantity.
Yes.
That's what we say.
Right.
So we are one and the same as the Lord, same thing,
yes.
and different.
Yes.
What they say
means they'll look at these two, but one at a time. They won't try to put them together. It's not that there won't be the same discussion or the same philosophy. Just they'll look at the oneness aspects, they'll look at the difference aspects. So for them it's two different views of the same thing. So they're not trying to bring them simultaneously together. They're not looking at the two at one time. Because if you look at one or you look at the other, then it's easy to do. But the point is the we're looking at it that the two are simultaneously one and different at the same time. Right? Because then that gives a taste that the other won't give. It's like this. Okay, in the other rasas, we see, okay, the one aspect is there is how prominent is the conjugal rasa in Vaikuntha? Means it's there, means God has his consort, Lakshmi. and where everybody's serving Lakshmi, and through them the great devotees like Vishrakshena, Garuda, Hanuman, and like this, and through the Guru. You know, so it's there, but it's not, it's just, it's there, it's connected with him, and you don't get involved. But are you appreciating that conjugal rasa in Vaikuntha? No, you just appreciate that God has a consort. But you understand this? Like that. Then, you take it further, then, okay, then he has these aspects where you get into, you could say Mahavaikuntha. So then, you know, he has the 16,108 wives and like this. But then it's, you know, it has that aspect, you know, he is who he is, there's his wives, they have their so you can take it to a certain degree. Does that make sense? So what is the point is that if you have oneness, then it has that, you have that aspect of, you know, that natural, how you say, value in a particular thing, you know, a mood, a situation, an interaction, a result that's common, right? And so that will create friendship. Right? So then that oneness aspect can come out. Like you see Madhvacharya, then he's talking so much just on dwait. He doesn't even bring out the oneness aspect. So to get into Vaikuntha, you don't actually have to understand the oneness. You just have to understand you're servant of God. Though we see, you know, we saw once in his commentary, that when he was referring to Vaikuntha, then that element of that oneness and the mood in that, he did acknowledge. But down on this plane, there's zero discussion. Right? So, then you get up. So, that you know that Krishna and his wives are there. And you know that they interact as perfect husbands and wives. Right? And a few different examples are given that, you know, some very nice, you know, his playful discussions with Rukmini, or some of his pastimes with Satyabhama. Right? But there are things that are, could be, you could say, public forum. You know what I'm saying? Though it may be a little bit more, you know, his discussions with Rukmini are a little bit more private, but the discussions that they're having are not something that couldn't be discussed in a general group. You know, that appreciates the family aspect, right? Mm-hmm. So, that oneness is necessary to create that closeness. So the more intense the oneness, the more intense the closeness. Yes. Right? It means if there's only one rock, then that rock is very close with itself. Right? But you don't get much taste out of just being one with yourself. Right? So, do we see what we're talking about here? So for Vaikuntha servitorship, emphasis is on the difference, or it's on that oneness of just the mood of service and those kind of things like that. You know, that reverence and all that. But the conjugal aspect of that oneness is not there. But as you go, then there must be something more of that. So then you see is that dwait, advait. You know, that will get you into Goloka. Like that. And Vishuddha Dwait seems to, on one aspect, at least the parental rasa gets you there. You understand? So there's some aspect that's dealt with. But now for Braj, then you need simultaneous oneness and difference. Because then the closeness between Radha and Krishna is so much more full and intense than it will be in Mathura, Dwarka, or Vaikuntha. So that means that oneness has to be at its utmost intensity, but at the same time, if the oneness is there and there's not a sense of difference at the same time, how do you taste that there's a oneness? How does the oneness make any? You know, say from oneness, no, you're two. And so that gives the taste. From being two, there's one. Yes? And even if one says, you know, just for discussion's sake, that no, but Nimbarka's already introduced Radha and Krishna worship in Vrindavan. But the point is there's no separation. So then separation is where it takes that to its, you know, very intense degree. And then that aspect, because they're in such separation, Krishna gives this philosophy just to ease their mind, because they can see Krishna everywhere, they can be absorbed in Krishna from everywhere. So they're always absorbed in Krishna. It doesn't mean they don't feel separation. But it just increases their opportunity to remember Krishna. Is that the sense? So we see it's a specific of Radha and Krishna worship in Braj. In the general Braj, then you require a Chintabeda Beda touch. Right? But for Vrindavan, you don't. Just you have to have the oneness and the difference. You have to have Dwaita Advaita. Like that. The others they appreciate, but it's part of majesty. Because anything below Braj will have a touch of majesty to it. Like that. You know, that greatness, that grandeur. To some degree, it may get smaller and smaller. It means Mathura means the sweetness is more. But there's still something. Or it goes into Vrindavan, but it doesn't have the aspect of separation. So it's more like Ananda Vrindavan. Right? It's just all the nice, the wonderful, like that. Which is, we have the glories of Ananda Vrindavan within Braja Vrindavan. The point is, Braja contains all the other aspects that are there in Vrindavan. But they're all there. So then, as the days, as the, you know, the various seasons, the various activities, then the variety that's there, the taste that's there, then you'll get. On the other ones, then they'll just be, you know, it's just like, it, also like in Ramayana, means Valmiki wrote the Ramayana, right? But Uttar Ramayana and all these others then are written, I think, by his students. Right? And so one of the books is called Ananda Ramayana. It's just all the nice, happy points that happen in the Ramayana. Because they're, you know, there's so many, and they're nice, and so who doesn't want to hear them? So he just compiled, one of the disciples compiled them all in one place, and that's the Ananda Ramayana. You know? So like that, there's so many Ramayans. Whether we've heard about them or not, it's another thing, but they're there.
Devotee was telling, Jyoti Goswami writes that what we hear about Rama and Valmiki wrote, that is happened in 24th Yuga cycle.
24th? Oh, and we're in the 28th, so not this one.
Not this one.
Okay. He was saying that the Ramayana that Valmiki wrote, what we're talking about is the
24th.
That was in the 24th Yuga cycle. But within this mana.
This
mana. Yeah. This mana, but the 24th. We're in the 28th now. Just to set the context so that you're comfortable.
So that is why among the kings, this is a common story about hearing about Lord Ram.
Oh, because so. they've been hearing this for the last four cycles.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's been around a while. Hence the name Quran.
Just for the record, it's not from the 24th, but because my mom used to read it in the Soviet Union in the 50s.
Okay.
It was translated.
It was translated as one of the books, too.
Of course, it's not that old.
No, but it's about that one. Yeah. They don't know that it's that one. Okay, you good?
Some devotees once attempted to write Ananda Bhagavat, and he took all the quotes of Happy Married Life of Prabhupada's books and compiled it.
In the Bhagavatam?
In all of Prabhupada's books. He compiled
in all
Happy
the
Married Life. And he presented to Prabhupada, it's using nonsense. Ananda Bhagavat. Ananda Bhagavatam.
Okay. All the happy points. He left out the all the other, the color. Yeah. Oh, it's famous. What, first canto? What's it? Second
man,
chapter.
Mad at mental woman, woman mental man.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, so he just made all the positive ones. Okay. Father said it was useless. Yeah. Because what's the point? If the point is so that someone sees that they, you know, what is the positive way to interact and all that, then that's nice. But if you're going to give that as a process of elevation, the point is you have to know we're not the body and we're the soul, and it's what you're using. Yeah. Okay, cool. Vasudev continued, thus these created entities, transformations of material nature, do not exist except when material nature manifests them within you, at which time you also manifest within them, right, as Paramatma. So that's the thing, is they're all being manifest within him because it's his potency, at the same time as he manifests within them as Paramatma. So he's doing both of these at once. And at the same time, he has nothing to do with either of them, and he's separate from that. Right? So. But aside from such periods of creation, you stand alone as the transcendental reality, right? So there's that aspect that he, even though the creation happens within him and he enters it, when there's no creation in between, then he still stands alone. The BBT purport states, when the universe is wound up at the time of its periodic annihilation, all the inert objects and bodies of living beings that hitherto were manifested by the Lord's Maya become disconnected from his sight. Then, since he maintains no association with them during the period of universal dissolution, they in fact no longer exist. In other words, material manifestations have real, functioning existence only when the Lord turns his attention to the creation and maintenance of the material cosmos. Right? So the things themselves aren't there. The inherent principles that they're based on, those are eternal, those are always within the Lord. But any of those transformations, not one of them remains. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Okay. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, these things do not exist. They are perishable. Their non-existence is described. So they're even called non-existence even when they're there.
Yes.
Like this table is non-existent because it's a temporary manifestation. Come back after some time, it's not there. Come before this, it wasn't there. The principle of a table, that's eternal. But this manifestation is not. So it's called non-existence. But means the point is it's real in that it's actually made of Krishna's energy, and that's why it's real, because it's Krishna. But at the same time as him manifesting this form, that would be temporary. So you have that where you're dealing with it as non-existence, but then if someone's going to see, oh, so nothing exists, no, it's real. Oh, so it's real, no, it's non-existent. You know, we're always going to, whichever the Maya, if your Maya is an attachment, we're going to say the opposite. Yeah. You know, or we're going to go with it and then bring it back.
Yeah.
Right? Yes, it doesn't exist. So how to make it exist is by connecting it to the Lord. Then it exists. So by engaging in the Lord's service, then it, you know, whichever way works for the situation.
That's how Achintya.
Sorry?
That's how Achintya.
Yes, yes. You can take it means because they're both going on. So they're saying, no, it's just this. No, that this is here also. Okay, so it's that. No, but this is also here. You know, or if the method they're using is one or the other, then you take that and with that, then show them how to apply that in devotion. Because it'll again come back down to both of them together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right? So. These things made visible exist in you, but at other times they do not exist at all. They are false. Because they are related to me, they should be real. You're at that time in the forms produced by transformations, by Maya. At other times when they are not produced, they are without relationship with you. Avyavaharika. Thus they have no relationship with you and are false. You always existing are not temporary. So means the manifestation of them are done by he used sayings, but if they're me, then they should be real. Yes, you're real, but these others are done by your energies. And so when they manifest them, then they're there, but because they're temporary, they're technically not there. You're always there. So you are those things as your energies, but at the same time, you as a person are separate from the energies. But at the same time, as your energies are non-different, because where else are they coming from? Right? Means the electricity and the generator are non-different. But the electricity is dependent on the generator. So the principle of electricity is there. That's why it's a generator. Mm-hmm. But when it turns, then you get electricity. And if it doesn't turn, it still exists, but the electricity doesn't. So that's why we would say in this case, the electricity is not non-real or non-existent, because its existence means it doesn't have a separate existence than existence on the generator. Because the generator is real. So when you connect it to the generator, then it's real. So when you connect everything to Krishna, then it becomes actually real. So we only bring out the aspect that's real because of its relationship with Krishna. But if you don't see the relationship with Krishna, then that's where we'll say it's false. So people get confused because the Upanishads are saying both these things. Vasudev continued. They are truly ignorant who, while imprisoned within in the ceaseless flow of this world's material qualities, fail to know you, the supreme soul of all that be, as their ultimate sublime destination. Because of their ignorance, the entanglement of material work forces such souls to wander in the cycle of birth and death. Right, so because they don't see the connection with Krishna, then you wander in the material world. Because material world is Krishna's energy, with that means Krishna's energy in ignorance, so you don't see its connection to Krishna.
Yes.
So as long as you're not seeing the connection to Krishna, you wander in the material world, because that's one's interest. As soon as one starts to see things in relation to Krishna, then you transfer the consciousness to the spiritual platform. And so then in the spiritual world, then that everything, that you have that permanence, because everything's connected to Krishna.
Yes.
Those prayers, usually prayers, are very formal. They are intended for us, mostly.
Because you have someone else in mind?
So because according to the relationship with Krishna, like if we have a relationship with somebody which is close, we usually don't bring up so much of the formal things.
But we'll bring up, but the personality is still the same. The elements are still there. But you don't see it in its formal situation, you see it in an informal situation.
Yes. And all the prayers are very formal.
Generally speaking, yes.
Right.
But you saw, remembers there was that point where Uddhava came and the different gopis came forward and said things, so they were talking about Krishna's glories, but were those formal?
Yes.
Yeah, because the point is when you're talking about knowledge, it has that particular aspect. But you see it in relationship to Krishna in whatever is the particular thing. So we as sadhakas, then we don't have a specific, interaction with Krishna based on our attachment to Krishna and pure love. Therefore, then we take all these things to purify and to be absorbed in Krishna and see all these things. So in that case, then yes, they all apply to us. No getting around that. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, since the causes of samsara are actually false, and samsara itself is false, why does one experience various sufferings in samsara? It is because of ignorance of Atma. In this world, the unintelligent undergo samsara in this world because of ignorance of your shelter. Why? The influence of the world is continuous. The word "too" indicates that intelligent persons do not undergo samsara. Oh, perfect Lord, right? Because samsara means, based on your activities on the material platform, you get material facilities, you take birth to continue those facilities. But those who are intelligent persons, right? That means they know Krishna. Whatever they're doing is a connection with Krishna. Therefore, it's generating a result on the spiritual platform. Right? And that, once going to that spiritual platform, that doesn't change. Because Krishna is unchanging, so therefore the platform of connection with Him is unchanging. But, at the same time, it has variety for the pastimes. Right? That's why we have to get used to this salmon. If we can't catch it here, we won't catch it there.
Getting there.
Huh?
Getting there.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's why you see it does that. O perfect Lord, your devotees, even if unintelligent, do not undergo samsara. Even the unintelligent, right?
Yes.
Right? Because they're doing things to please Krishna. So they may not know all the philosophy nicely and all kinds of things like that. But because they're serving Krishna and under authority, therefore they also don't undergo samsara.
Mm-hmm.
But if one has some brain, one should use it for Krishna. Otherwise, if you don't, then... Yes. Yes.
Some devotees only deal with primary and they advance. Like some devotees deal with only primary, but they also don't see any secondary connection with primary. But sometimes for them primary becomes very ritual.
But it means, what do you mean by primary here?
Means like chanting. Some devotees are chanting, doing devotional service.
Means that's all they do is chanting.
No, chanting, doing services in the temple, everything. And
okay,
they are
that you could say that's direct devotional activities, but there is a primary and secondary within direct.
Yes.
Just like there's primary and secondary within indirect.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So, the point is that the secondary has meaning when the primary is there.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, what becomes ritualistic is the secondary, not the primary. So if you see it becomes ritualistic or like that, because there's not enough of the primary. Though they're doing direct activities.
Mm.
So if you have good association, that generally the direct will be more quick and more efficient.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But the point is you have to be able to understand is that the secondary is there just to please Krishna. So there's activities you do on a daily basis, see that you're doing them to please Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Or the verse explains how the jiva is ignorant of the Lord. Though there is an abundance of your qualities, like mercy, experienced by all directly just by a little surrender, not knowing you, the shelter of all the jivas, who are hard to understand by one's own endeavor, the ignorant undergo samsara. Right? Does that make sense? So one is they're situated in samsara, they don't know the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Those who then know the Lord, they're not engaged in samsara. Right? Or then he takes it, or it goes, the jiva is ignorant of the Lord. The other is that he's absorbed in samsara, and that when he connects it to the Lord, then he gets out of samsara.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's in, you know, proper knowledge or not, the point is if it's connected to Krishna in a proper way, then he's out of samsara.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can explain that the jiva is in ignorance. And because of that ignorance, that's why they're in samsara.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? It's subtle. It's a different aspect of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing the Lord, that's what makes it out.
Yes.
Of samsara. Right? So it's the ignorance. It's not what you're doing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the Gita, Krishna says, Janma Karma Cha Medyam, and then he says, those who know my activity and my birth, they will never be born again.
Yes.
And then later, he says, if you remember me at the time of death, you remember me alone, then you won't take birth again. So it's it's not the same as he said before. So apparently there's a...
Yeah, you could say, no, it's two different angles of, because here in Vichara, it appears that it's different things. That's the whole point of Vichara, is you're looking at the same thing from different angles. Right? So, here's that you know Krishna's, nature and all that. So then you won't take birth again. Why won't you take birth again? Because if you understand Krishna, how he's substance, then at the time of death, what of illusion can give you any shelter? Only substance can give you shelter. Therefore, you'll remember Krishna. Right? If you appreciate Krishna's, you know, name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and all these things, and his transcendental position, then why you wouldn't remember him at the time of death? So it's not that those who know him aren't remembering him at the time of death. The point is, those who know him, they're the ones that remember him at the time of death. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that means any devotee, because when it goes to take your shelter, who's going to help you? You know? When it's time to go, what's going to help you? Right? The body's not going to help you, because that's your problem, right? Like that. Nobody else in the room can help you. It's not if they hold onto your hand, you're not going anywhere. Right? Because the jiva somehow or another isn't that big. Right? You know? Yeah, they wouldn't even have like tweezers small enough they could reach in and grab just you, right? You know? You know what I'm saying? So what's going to help you? Right? The name, the kirtan, the name, the remembrance of Krishna. Is your mother going to help you? No. You know, is your money going to help you? No. So none of these things can help you, because they're all temporary, like the body. So you're going from one temporary, you're leaving a temporary situation. Another temporary situation can only give you a temporary result. So yes, if you remember your mother at the time of death, then you'll go and then you'll take up that kind of position. But it's still temporary, like your mother is. But if you take shelter of Krishna, who's eternal, that's why it says that one who knows Krishna's, you know, divine nature, then you know that eternity. Then taking shelter of Krishna, you attain the divine platform, that eternal platform. But it also makes that point, you have to remember him and not him and your mother.
Because they're both prominent.
Sorry?
They're both very prominent.
Yes. So then, but then if they're both so prominent, then you'll take birth as, you know, a devotee who has a nice mother like that, and then you can continue again. Yeah, so that's why I have to say Krishna says him alone. Just don't worry, you'll get your own mother over there. You don't have to worry about this one. His next life, it won't be the same one anyway. In fact, you'll be that mother.
The scientists, they did the research, and, you know, people at the time of death, they call for mother most of the time. Somehow it's...
Well, because they were there when you... In other words, when does motherhood have its, like, fullest manifestation in your life?
Baby.
Can a baby do anything? They absolutely can't do anything.
Right.
Like, except cry and a few other things. Yeah. You know, but the point is they're completely unable to do anything. So at the time of death, can you do anything? No. So when you're in a situation where you can't do anything, who is there for you when you could do nothing? Your mother. So that's why then the tendency is to think of the mother. But the point is that it's not going to be that manifestation and all that you'll take on that nature. You know, so then you end up as a, what do you call it? Doppelganger? And you become a doppelganger of your mom. You know what a doppelganger is? It is German.
Person who resembles you physically, face and everything.
Someone who looks exactly like you. You know, but it's not your twin. It's just some other god. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's how things move. Like Prabhupada said, is that the caterpillar is killed by the wasp. So the last thing it thinks of is the wasp. In the next life, that caterpillar becomes a wasp. So like that. Yeah, so therefore, they say, what you're eating or what you're doing, if you choke on a peanut, you'll be remembering that peanut. In the next life, you'll become a peanut. Yes, no. Yes. So, remember Krishna, and then there's no problem. So, the more you know about Krishna, the more you appreciate about Krishna, the more one will tend to take shelter of Krishna. Because we see here is that when that helplessness is there, the mothers will help. Right? But the point is there's that helplessness beyond what the mother can help, only Krishna can help. So that's why one should remember Krishna and not. So,
that's also actually Krishna tells him, remember me at the time of death. He tells in 8th chapter, and 7th chapter is knowledge of the absolute. So he describes about himself in the 7th.
He describes about himself in the 7th, and then the 8th says you should remember me. Okay. So.
And Adi Agnya, Adi Bhautik, all those things he describes, then he describes.
Then he describes.
Remember me at the time of death.
Yeah. So he's already given the system, and then. So, you can hear.
I couldn't
hear. He was saying that in the 7th chapter, right? In Knowledge of the Absolute, he talks about himself and how to see him. Then in the 8th chapter, he talks about remembering him at the time of death.
Right.
So he's already explained himself.
Yes.
So you can see is that, you know, as a teacher, he's giving the knowledge first and then talking about its application. Yes. Rather than talking about the application and then expecting you to figure it out.
Now, this particular statement that it mentions that intelligent persons do not undergo samsara.
Intelligent persons do not undergo samsara, yes.
So does it mean that intelligent persons or the devotees, the process of not undergo samsara begins?
The part I couldn't catch.
It mentions that they do not undergo samsara.
Yes.
So does it mean, or my interpretation, whatever is that, the process to not undergo samsara begins, and then it may take how many of our lifetimes?
The process of not undergoing samsara begins when you take up Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, but then it will take many lifetimes to completely put an end to the samsara.
It takes remembering Krishna at the time of death.
Yes, but then not necessarily everybody remembers Krishna at the time of death, because there are different examples. So.
The point is it only takes one lifetime. You can take more if you like.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like you take out a mortgage, you can pay it back earlier, or you can take 30 years as you like. You know, it's up to you. Just you more seriously look at it, then it can go quicker. So the Acharyas say, the Shastra says, in one lifetime you can perfect yourself and go back to Godhead. It can be done. It's not that it has to take. If you feel it has to take many, many lives, it's the wrong sampradaya. Try the mudras. For them it's 14 lifetimes. Like that. Including becoming Brahma. Yeah, so he's all the Gopa Kumari goes through all those different levels. That's all part of the process. Right? But if you're not so, you know, 14 is not a magic number for you, and you know, one sounds better, then this is the line for you. So Bhagavatam and the other, the Acharya, they say one lifetime. So it can be done. So if you're thinking it can be done in one lifetime, you try for that. But if you think, oh no, it'll take many lifetimes, then one thing, oh no, I'm just being humble. But then at the same time is, are you being determined? Are you being focused? you know, like that. So that's why the focus is on one lifetime, because then you'll get it together. Right? So, in other words, we get the transcendental, we get the transcendental effect of the one lifetime philosophy. While others use the one lifetime philosophy and all they end up is in heaven or hell. Forever. Yeah, so, we have one lifetime, you go back to Godhead forever, and they have one material lifetime and forever in heaven or hell. That's not going to happen. But it's a long time, so it seems like forever. You know. Just like the child in the back of the seat of the car on a long drive. You know, or the clock during an exam or something like that. Or, there's another, not knowing the truth, difficult to understand by logic about you, the Antaryami, the soul of all beings, the ignorant undergo samsara. So, not knowing you, right, then they undergo samsara. Because in knowing you, you have to be able to... In knowing you, means you can't understand through logic. It's only through devotion you can understand. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So it brings out another point, is that by through logic, through the intelligence, so it's not just knowledge, it's that knowledge done in devotion, that's how you know. Vasudeva continued, by good fortune a soul may obtain a healthy human life. An opportunity rarely achieved, right? So even though the modern thing is all about healthy, it says here, a fortunate, good fortunate soul, and it's rarely achieved. So they're only hopeful of attaining health. Right? But if he is nonetheless deluded about what is best for him, O Lord, your illusory maya will cause him to waste his entire life. He may waste a very nice, healthy life, but it will be wasted. You keep this whole world bound up by the ropes of affection. And thus, when people consider their material bodies, they think, this is me. And when they consider their progeny and the other relations, they think, these are mine. Footnote 12. He speaks this verse with affectionate anger. Srila Jiva Goswami. You are not our sons, but the very lords of both material nature and its creator, Mahavishnu. Right, so in here, this whole thing is being given, and it has that more formal because he's not seeing them as the sons. Mm-hmm. Right, so you see, as if they're maintaining that relationship with him, you know, above servitorship. Right, then we'll see that it'll have a little bit less formality to it, because you were mentioning about the formality. That's because in these prayers, he's not seeing them as his sons, because he's like he says here, you're Mahavishnu, you're not my son. As you yourself have told us, you have descended to rid the earth of the rulers who are a heavy burden upon her. Therefore, O friend of the distressed, I now approach your lotus feet for shelter, the same lotus feet that dispel all fear of worldly existence for those who have surrendered to them. Enough. Enough with hankering for sense enjoyment, which makes me identify with this mortal body, and think of you, the Supreme, as my child. Right? So he's thinking, because he's identifying with the body, therefore then he's seeing the Lord as his son. Right? So the giving up of the sense gratification, that's fine, but engaging the senses in the Lord's service, then that's a natural thing to stand. So he's just, you know, said enough of this, because now he realizes that he's the Supreme Lord. Simply because that's the nature of the Dorka Rasa, is that it's a mix between majesty and sweetness. And because the nature of either one of them is fully absorbing. Right? Someone, let's say in Vaikuntha, they're absorbed in the majesty of the Lord. They're fully absorbed and fully satisfied. Right? and someone is absorbed in sweetness, they're fully absorbed into the sex. And so Dwarka and Mathura, they're a mix of the two. They have both. So when one starts, then they go in that direction. Does that make sense? So you need to, so it doesn't get too far out of the context, because it's a mix of both. So you can't go so far that the other one can't be accessed. So when it goes too far, then we see that Krishna through Yoga Maya then brings it back. Does that make sense? So here, because of the situation, then it goes back the other way. Right? What was 85? What was 84? Okay, Kurukshetra. So by what happened at Kurukshetra, what's happening at Kurukshetra?
Sages.
The sages are discussing. So because of those discussions, now he sees he's the Supreme Lord. Because the sages generally hear, when they're just sages, generally it means they're either in Shanta Ras, which is much of the time, or sometimes they may have the Dasya. But the Shanta, they're always appreciating the greatness of the Lord. Right?
Narad Muni.
Yeah, so Narad Muni was discussing. So he's taking that mood, like that. Because we see Narad Muni seems to have a relationship with the Lord in all the Rasas. But in this scenario, then it would be in that Shanta or Dasya, and then in that way. And so because of that, that's awoken that aspect of Dasya within Vasudeva. So it covers the parental rasa. It just basically disappears and the other one becomes. So the rati just shifts. Right? So that's the difference in the taste that keeps moving. So that has a flavor in itself. And then Krishna, then he is the Supreme Lord. And they interact. And then at the same time, he's not the Supreme Lord. He's just their son. Does that make sense?
Is that because the knowledge is covered and uncovered?
Is it because the knowledge is covered and uncovered?
That means
this particular kind of knowledge, yes. But at the same time, as it's because they're susceptible to that, just by the nature of their relationship with the Lord. While we see in Vrindavan, then they're not susceptible to that. So even they hear knowledge about it, and they can know that knowledge, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like we see that Latter pastime may have been even in Kurukshetra when Nanda Baba is talking to Krishna. He's talking to him as his son and everything like that, but because he's the Supreme Lord, then he can do like this. You know, so he can make that arrangement for them to, you know, continue nicely as father and son. And that's the difference. While with Vasudeva, while the Dwarka, when they hear too much about the grandeur of the Lord, then they shift into Dasya Rasa. And then Yoga Maya will bring them back at some point. Right? Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Since you bind jivas with the ropes of affection made of Maya, in order to destroy those bonds today, with an arousal of their intelligence by your mercy, I surrender to your lotus feet. So he's just taking affection becoming from Maya, which it does. It's just a matter of whether it's Yoga Maya or Mahamaya. But generally these great personalities, they are just dealing with the Lord's energy, so they always talk as if they're on the material platform. Mm-hmm. That's human nature. Mm-hmm. Right? Otherwise, if you're not on that platform, then why are you human? Then you're divine. So it's not human pastimes. So human pastimes means we're here and there's something divine above this. So that's why you'll see Nanda Baba and all these others, they'll talk about how, you know, we're just, you know, regular householders and we're attached to this and that and all. Because that's the human way of looking at things. And even Krishna looks at it that way. But because it's always centered around Krishna, then it's perfect and transcendental. But the medium is human pastimes. So therefore then, because it's made by Maya, the affection, he wants to give up Maya, so that means he gives up this affection as his sons. And because now, because he has intelligence, by his mercy, by hearing from Narada, he's realized these things, so therefore he takes that, because of Krishna's mercy, now he realizes the nature of attachment, and that is illusion, and he's giving that up, so therefore he's giving up, you know, enough with hankering for these things and seeing him as his child, because he's saying that is because of attachment. Does that make sense? So they're not distinguishing here between the Yogamaya and the Mahamaya. Because you have to remember, they're not sadhakas. Yes. We have to distinguish, because otherwise we'll stay in Mahamaya. They don't distinguish, and they'll always stay in Yogamaya. Yeah. No?
Yeah. I'm just confused, because stai never changes. Stai bhav.
But this is Dwarka stai.
Yeah.
So it means it has both of these things. That's the nature of Dwarka, the Dwarka Bhava.
Because parental and surrendership simultaneous?
Yes, but they're in the one, but they can be influenced by the other because of the aspect of majesty being there. Means Vrindava, majesty's there, but it's covered by the sweetness. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, therefore, it doesn't have that effect. But Dwarka, then, that has that option, is Mahavaikuntha, technically. Because who's there? Krishna in what form?
Dwarkadish.
Yes. And where is Dwarkadish, where is he expanding from?
From Mathura.
From?
Mathura.
Yes, but I'm saying, and then, and that means then they're expanding from Mahanarayan,
right.
Who's expanding from Balaram, who's expanding from Krishna.
Yes.
So we see is that they're taking on the mood of the Chaturvyuha, but it has that element of sweetness to it, because Krishna in any of his aspects can deal in that way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like dealing with Lakshmi. In Vaikuntha, there'll be more sweetness than there will be in other aspects. But the point is it still will have that majesty. She'll see herself as a servant. But it doesn't mean that other rasa is not there. So, because the higher rasas already include the lower. Parental already includes servitorship. So the parent doing parental stuff is serving the child. So you just remove that flavor, and then you have that. Doesn't seem to be so. Not upset, happy. So it's not a problem. So all they have to do is bring that and it comes back. Because it's just, in other words, for them, it's just a portion of that. Yeah. Now he's not something to do. Okay. Okay. How can he who gives bondage give liberation? Those feet dispel fear for those who surrender. But they have not surrendered. You are just praying for that. O friend of those suffering, one should not worry about this, since you are naturally merciful. You have made them suffer in order that they turn to you, the crest jewel of all gold. Having prayed for those in samsara, in humility, while thinking himself a human due to human-like pastimes, he prays for himself. Out of greed of the senses, for sense satisfaction, I think, with the Lord as my son, I have great wealth. I am not like Nanda, who has only prema for you. So he's also then seeing that you know, his, because their how you say, mood is in that of majesty. So then even if he's the Lord, then because of that there's so much. He is the Lord of Lakshmi, so then having him as a son means you have so much. But that's just the fact. But then they're taking that as a mundane thing. Right? And so therefore then they're looking at it as he's the Supreme Lord. And so then, in that way then, taking that mood. Does that make sense? So then Krishna will adjust that.
Right.
Up to now, then he's saying his thing, right? You know, because remember his program. He arranged everybody. He arranged me. Whatever they were doing was over. Then Vasudev then organized. He saw so many great sages are there, so many great personalities. So then he organized a big yagya. And so then at the yagya means these great personalities are going to come and talk, right? You know, as it is when we do these things. Then you see you open the program, you have some discussion, some philosophy, then you do the yagya, whatever rituals are going on, like this, and then kirtan, and so the technical is these things are for the opportunity to hear and chant about the Lord. Right? So they're doing these big elaborate yagyas that will take, you know, days or weeks or months or like this, and so that means there's that much discussions. And so in that, then the sages spoke, and in that, now he has some realization about Krishna's position, and so now he's taken it in this light. And now we see, now it'll be adjusted. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.